We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promote for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Welcome to the ID10T podcast number 1043. I'm talking a little quieter now because I'm in a hotel and I think people would rather hear someone be having sex in the next room than recording a podcast. You know what I mean? There's just so many podcasts now. People just like beating on the wall. Hey, stop podcasting in there. There's other people trying to sleep. So I'm just trying to keep it down and be respectful. But I'm in a hotel because I'm on the road doing stand-up dates. If you go to wizardguitar.com, that's the name of the tour, the Wizard Guitar Tour. I just had some really fun shows in Columbus, Ohio with the Funny Bone. Thanks if you came out to those. And January 30th through February 1st, I'll be at Helium in Philadelphia, Helium Comedy Club. Also, Feb 27 through 29, San Francisco at the Punchline, and then Sacramento the weekend after that, and then Portland and Boston and Denver and Bloomington and Minneapolis and Austin and Cleveland, bunch of shows coming up. So wizardguitar.com, come on out. I'll sign your pop toy if you want. It doesn't even have to be mine. I'll sign anyone's. Just bring me a Thanos pop toy. I'll sign it. I don't care. But let's talk about you, the ID10T community. At the Corkboard, events at ID10T.com, like Mike, who writes, "My cousin made a thing, namely a podcast. Hopefully he's not doing it in a hotel room or someone might bang on the wall." He is a self-made Emmy Award-winning producer who has worked his way up from being a video editor to being a producer, and he started a weekly podcast called This Week in Production, which is a candid conversation about video production-related topics. He has guests ranging from longtime veterans in the business to filmmakers and other creatives who are just starting out. He often talks about the tech he has used, lessons he's learned the hard way, best practices for working with clients, and other stories from on the road. This Week in Production is available on iTunes, Spotify, wherever you get podcasts. That is a really great idea. I mean, that is very relevant to my interests, of course. But I think that is a spectacular idea. I mean, you know what? I sort of joke that there's a lot of podcasts, but I really do think that's a good thing. I mean, you can literally, any sphere of interest that you might have, there's probably something out there that can address it. And if there isn't, then you could just go friggin' make one. So thank you, Mike, for sharing. Again, events at ID10T.com is how you would share your thing with the ID10T audience. This episode is Lucy Lawless, who is rad. Oh, she's such a cool lady. First of all, she is Xena. Second of all, she's really nice and fun and funny, but she also is a true crime fanatic. And, you know, like I say, like, oh, my wife and I watch a lot of true crime. She legitimately watches true crime in real time. One of her kind of meditative passion hobbies is that she just goes to courtrooms and just watches the process and absorbs the justice system and really just kind of tries to understand and really sort of be a part of how the whole process works. She did a docuseries called My Life is a Murder, which is on Acorn TV, and I hope they do more of them, but this was just such an interesting deep dive into not only the stuff that you know her from, but also just like what fascinates her about it and what she gets out of it and the whys and the... And it just went in such an interesting direction that I greatly enjoyed this conversation. Again, such a cool lady. And I may have... I have a screen used Necronomicon from Ash versus Evil Dead that I got for my wife as a present because Evil Dead is in her most favorite things of all time, the whole Evil Dead universe. And maybe I got the Necronomicon and asked her to sign it, which she was totally cool about doing, so I really appreciated that. So here is the ID10T podcast number 1043 with Lucy Lawless.
Initiating ID10T protocol.
I really want to go to New Zealand. It just looks
you and every American magical. They're like, get me out of here. And I'm like, how can I get back? I need more people, more trash.
I just want to visit it. It just so magical. It feels like going to Narnia, all right? New Zealand feels like it might be like Narnia to me.
Yes, I think Peter Jackson made that up and everybody's rolling with that. That's the legend.
Now, do you think at first was it like, oh wow, tourism's up in New Zealand? Are they now like, all right, take it easy, we get it, we just give us a break?
A little bit. There's something that New Zealanders cannot stand, and we've had some really recalcitrant tourists who drop litter.
Mm-hmm.
And New Zealanders hate that. We really hate that. Or we had a couple from a family from England, and the whole of New Zealand would sort of watch this trail of destruction as this famous family was traveling around the country just abusing people and trashing the place. And anyway, yeah, the country kind of ganged up on these people. They're heading towards you. Havelock North. Come in, Havelock North. Yeah, yeah. I've got them in my sights. Yeah, I've got a beat on them.
Pick that up.
Yeah.
That's incredible, because I remember when we went to Japan for our honeymoon, and when we went to the Disneyland in Japan, not one crumb of anything on the ground.
They don't eat in public.
And there's no trash cans anywhere. Yeah. You are expected to hold on to your own trash until you get to a bathroom or your home or something, and then you throw it away. And people
Is
do
that
it.
So
yes.
I didn't know that.
Yes, and people do. It's incredible.
Who knew that was possible, eh?
Yeah,
we think we have to like discharge trash as the second we make it. We have to like get it out of our own personal orbit.
Yeah. Hey, if it's not my car, it's not my problem anymore.
Yeah,
you know,
right.
Like it's bad. But of course,
America. For them.
Yeah, exactly. Good for them. But America, you know, there's like 350 million of us. So it's just, I think it's probably just difficult to. It's difficult. That's like herding cats, you know? Like, you can't get 350 million people to follow any one thing.
Well, not when you've got rugged individualism as part of your cultural identity, right?
And especially, so that's part of our country's identity, and then narcissistic individualism is sort of the theme of Los Angeles, you know, where it's like, it's really, it's not just about what I want to do, it's just all about me, you know? Like, that's kind of kind of the thing here, it feels like.
Do you think so? I think it's such a working town that I don't find that to be true.
It's a working town, but it's built on a foundation of unbridled ambition, because there are like little hidden pots of gold everywhere in Los Angeles, you know, referring to careers or,
right,
you know,
right.
whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And so I do feel like there – not that there aren't incredibly – I love it here, but I'm just saying I do think that – the fierce ambition
I think there is a strata of society, which thinks that everything that glitters is gold. And by golly, the Kardashians have shown that there is gold to be found in glitter.
Right.
Like everybody's making out all the cosmetic, you know, Lancome and all that. Everybody's making the glitter version, right?
Because
they've bought glamour and glitz and all that stuff back. But your average person, I just don't find that to be true. I don't find that they buy into it at all.
I hope you're absolutely right. I wonder if the 2020s
will signify, much in the way that like the sort of Wall Street greed is good, glam metal of the 80s gave way to grunge and more like...
Oh, interesting. Are we
about due for a resurgence, like a 30-year resurgence cycle of...
Funny you mention that, because I suppose the converse of the glitter, that I don't want to take the Kardashians' name in vain because I have nothing against those girls, actually.
Sure.
go with God. I'm fine with you. But the converse is this Marie Kondo, you know, that Japanese cleaning up girl.
I've just
done what... I've been through all my drawers at home in New Zealand and I got rid of anything that didn't bring me joy. So now when I open my closet, nothing rebukes me. There's nothing there looking at me going, oh, why did you pay so much for me and now you don't wear me? Or I really look great in that color, but the shape is crap. And maybe if I lose 10 pounds, I'll look good in that. No, bye-bye. It's all gone.
Okay, good. Because I've known about Marie Kondo for quite a long time and KonMari. But my problem is that so many things bring me joy. Like, it's very difficult. Mm-hmm. So I'm sure there's a sliding scale of like, well, it's got to bring you like B plus and above joy.
That's funny.
Not just like, hey, I like this thing, you know, like.
But hang on, or is it? Or is the quality of joy is not strained? Maybe. It doesn't bloody matter. It's joy. Boom, you get to keep it.
I guess
right?
That's true. But, you know, the other thing too, the other side of that, Marie Kondo, if you're listening, is that, you know, maybe you're in a weird mood that day. And then one thing might not bring you joy that day, but the next day you're like, God damn it, that thing actually was joyful and so, I was in a bad mood.
It's the fear of FOMO.
Right, yes.
FOMO.
It's FOMO. That's a new thing. That's going to be a word of the 2020s.
You can have it.
But I wonder if we are going to get back to a simplification and a de-glittering. The funny thing about the Kardashians is the one that the billionaire, like the 21-year-old billionaire.
Nobody's ever met.
Yeah, that's Kylie. I think that's Kylie. And
no, it's another name.
Is it Kylie?
Kendall.
No, Kendall's older. It's Kylie.
Yeah.
It's one of them with a K name.
Yeah.
And so that's all of them. But she had posted pictures of like her jet. Uh-huh. And then there was like a weird backlash. Like, well, you're flaunting your wealth. Like, what the fuck, Kardashians, have you been watching, people? This is the agreement. Like, this is, you guys made this.
Right.
You know what this is. Of course they're flaunting it. That's why they're... That's why they do what they do. So that was just funny to see, like, the backlash of... It's like, that's so on brand. What else did you think?
Yeah.
You know?
The more is more.
Post a picture, like, needle pointing by a fireplace, you know? And then that'll be...
I must say, if I opened my closet and found a private jet in there, it would be out. Like, that would
bring you joy.
No joy whatsoever.
Even if you're when you're going through TSA at the airport, just, like, a little bit of joy...
You know, there is that thing where you go to those funny little airports and you walk straight onto some private plane.
Yep.
And every, like Jet Suite X or something, and you walk straight off. Nobody's looked at your name or anything.
Yeah, no.
It's like traveling in New Zealand.
Yeah.
But
there is an element to that that's fun. But I get it, you know, carbon footprints and whatnot.
Yeah, it's more about that for me anyway.
So what are you doing in Los Angeles right now? Are you promoting the show?
No, I'm looking at apartments and things and thinking about coming back,
fantastic.
Baby. Yeah, my children are off to university and I'm... it's Lucy time.
It's Lucy time.
Yeah.
That's good. And when you come here, do you want to get on a series? Do you want to do movies? Like, what's fun for you? I mean, like, your show on Zenith lasts a long time, and I'm sure that's good because it's regular work. And at the same time, do you sort of feel like, I don't know, it might be fun to, after a while, you sort of get it, you want to try something else?
Well, you should be so lucky as to have a show that goes more than 3 years these days.
Especially
anyway. So I fear that less than I used to, that's for sure. You know, for listeners at home, that means, you know, you're scared of getting into a marriage with TV producers or even a role, because if it goes wrong, it's really hard to exit. There's no exit strategy.
Yeah, that's a difficult divorce.
Yeah, you're munted.
Yeah,
as we say down under. But no, that's not such a fear these days. It's always just about the role and the people and the company that you're in.
Yeah.
I just got sent something that's filming in Spain, and I was like, oh, I totally want to go to Spain, man. I would like, the more foreign, the better. I'm super into it, you know, but I had to look and go and do the Marie Kondo thing. Will this bring me joy? Yeah, no.
Right.
No, actually, the role, no, I know this is not in line with what I'm wanting in life. I've kind of done this sort of thing, and I'm not dicking around anymore, you know.
Well, time's that's good. Precious. I mean, part of figuring out if something brings you joy is that you really kind of have to know yourself.
Yeah.
Because if you don't, it's difficult to make those decisions. So if you know, like, oh, this, I know me and I can project into that situation and I know that's not the direction I want to go, then it's easier to make those decisions, I think.
Yeah.
Do you, does New Zealand have a, because my pal Rhys Darby made this Tall Poppies show, just sort of like the idea, you know, like you never want to be too tall of a poppy. You don't want to stand out too much. Is that?
Well, you get your head cut off.
Yes, exactly.
Well, I grew up, I'm a little older than Rhys, and I grew up when that was very much alive and well before. I always thought there was something we could really borrow from America, and that was that when somebody succeeds here, everybody goes, awesome, because if you succeeded, that means I can too. Like, that's part of the American psyche that you should feel really good about, because in countries like mine, historically, changing now, but if you have half the pie, there's less for me. You know, it was a sort of a zero-sum game.
Right.
Whereas Americans don't have that. And I think it's healthier, actually.
Right. Well, I wonder if it also has to do with being if you're part of a smaller community, if anyone stands out, then you're not part of, then it almost feels like you're being separate from the group, as opposed to, you know, if you stand out in hundreds of millions of people, like, wow, good for that guy, you know, because you're not all a part of the same kind of immediate community. So maybe there's not that level of envy. Who does that asshole think they are? That's not, come on.
Or could it be that it's more of set in the old world of England, which is much more socially stratified?
Totally.
So if you're over there, you're in a big community, but say you're from East London or something, if you suddenly get above your station, it's a repudiation of who you came from. I don't know this to be true, by the way. This is just me supposing, you know, that you are letting down the team by wanting to go and live in a castle just because you can afford it.
Right.
Mr. Beckham or whatever. You know? You're supposed to stay in one of those horrible council flats for the rest of your life. And, anyway, I don't know what it is.
But I think that's it, though. It feels like you're abandoning your community and also joining the other team who oppresses the people who are...
Oh, la-di-da. Yeah. Who do you think you are? Yeah.
I just want to get lattes every day. That's all.
La-di-da.
Oh, wow. Good for you. Yeah. Good for you. I'm fascinated by your fascination with, because your show was about, the show that you did was about murder trials.
Oh, the Australian show.
Yeah. Yes.
My Life is Murder.
And I really, you know, because my wife and I are true crime fanatics.
Oh, me too.
Yes. And it does sort of tap into that thing where we can, you know, because for the longest time we would watch scripted shows. We, you know, watch scripted procedurals or scripted crime dramas or whatever. And then television sort of figured out, oh, if you like that, the real stuff is even crazier.
Right.
And it's real. These things really happen. So is it that we get to follow an arc that usually kind of resolves at the end, where you see actual justice? Like, what do you think the main draw of this explosion of true crime is?
Ooh, I guess. Well, first and foremost, that scripted drama. Fake crime.
Right, yeah, yeah.
it's satisfying because it does tie up neatly and there is the verisimilitude of justice at the end, and I think we're all a bit hungry for that these days. So, and it's always a little bit heightened.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas true crime in real life, when you go to the courts, like I'm a bit of a court watcher when I don't have anything else to do, is it really lacking in glamour or mystery. It's really banal and gritty and brutal and sad, you know. So the true crime that you see on, say, Forensic Files or whatever is always a little bit heightened because ain't nobody going to find it entertaining what I go and watch in the courts.
Right.
Only, you know, odd birds like me are going to find that in some way illuminating about the human spirit. Everybody else is just going to be depressed. By
right.
It, you know. Why? Because I think we're all just get better access. We can access it all the time. So many podcasts, so many. You can follow documentaries about just about anything. They make it six or 12 part series on Netflix, right?
Oh yeah.
Oh, you can go deep.
Yeah, but I wonder if it's also that sort of human curiosity of, you know, the darkest recesses of the human mind. What happens when people go bad, you know, and not getting away with it and figuring out like, oh, this is how these people, because we watch a lot of this, and we are somewhat acquaintance with this fella named Joe Kenda, who does a show called Homicide Hunter.
No, yeah.
And Homicide Hunter is great because he really humanized, in the way that I think a lot of American culture sort of glorifies crime in a way, he doesn't glamorize it in any way. And he talks about the nightmares that he has and the horrors of it from a very human level. But he was doing it at a time where there wasn't really a lot of technology. You know, they didn't, DNA wasn't a thing yet. It was just old gumshoe, like, and that to me is really, really, really interesting. It's like, because it feels like before we really had technology, how did everyone just not get away with crime all the time? How do they track these people, you know, how do they track people down?
I do not know. Do you think, though, because they rely so much on instinct, and that's going to vary so much from individual detective to one detective from another, aren't they? So, I don't know, interviewing techniques are so interesting. Do you ever look at interrogation techniques?
No.
Oh, my God, so great. It's all on YouTube. And perhaps these days criminals are getting a little bit more sophisticated, but your average murderer isn't actually a criminal. They're just some hot-headed, you know, some or drugged-out person or jealous as buggery or whatever. They've never committed a crime before, probably, but where was I going with this? So they're not sophisticated. I don't know.
I had a friend who used to write for the Crime Beat in Los Angeles, and he said he used to really be afraid of getting randomly murdered in Los Angeles until he started doing the Crime Beat and realized most murders are...
In the home?
Well, related to that, they're committed against people that the murderer knows. So there, he said the occurrence of random murder, he said, was exceptional, like way lower than he thought it would be. And so I guess it was just a matter of not pissing off any of his friends. But the idea that it is this kind of, I mean, you know, because obviously there's like wives who kill, mistresses who attack, husbands who, you know, like there is so much of it in the home and there's so much of it in the community. And I'm always, it's the idea, I guess you're right. People just, even if they think it through, it's like, you're not really thinking this through. Like you just used a credit card at a gas station. So how do you, you know... You obviously didn't really, this was just a thing that happened.
Mm.
What do you love about it? What do you love about seeing it? Do you actually go to courtrooms and watch?
Mm-hmm.
What do you love about that?
Well, I have a lot of patience for certain things. I love the voir dire very much. I haven't seen jury selection in New Zealand, though I have been court watching there before. But I've seen it in Louisiana, in Caddo Parish, which is the parish which meets out the most death penalties in America, and became friends with the judge and all the bailiffs and everything. You know, it's very interesting. But you learn about the community where they're polling the community who has who amongst these prospective jurors has an incidence of crime in their family, major crime in their family, and 2 out of 14 in Shreveport had 2 major criminal events in their immediate family.
Oh, my God.
Which is shocking. And that's what happens in poor communities. Anywhere that there's economic stress, up goes tensions, up goes murder rates, up goes drug addiction, everything. It's all about inequality and, you know, poverty. Anyway, it was a dog fighting trial. And out of the presence of the rest of the jury, they were polling some people who asked for privacy. And so I'm sitting there like a ghoul in the back of a, you know, hiding behind a pillar. And this very upright woman with a, she was like 70 years old and she had a long bob and very regal. She sort of glided up the aisle and they'd called her and her name was, I won't say what her actual name was, but her name was like Miss America
right.
or something like that. It was like a beauty queen, right?
Right.
And I was like thinking, you know, here comes the lady with a tiara and the sash and all this. No, this very regal older woman floats up the aisle and she sits on this stand and they say, ma'am, I believe that you have somebody who is incarcerated in your family. She said, yes, my son is in Angola prison for 11 years. And they said, and what is he in for, ma'am? And she says, child rape.
Oh, my right? God.
And I'm going, oh, my God, I feel like such a turd just sitting there watching this woman having to bear her soul, you know. And they said, and ma'am, I believe you have a court, something before the courts presently. And she said, yes, last year my aunt was kidnapped and murdered. And when is that coming up for trial, ma'am? November. With this judge here, like
oh
it is
God.
Such a small community. That's the degrees of separation are so slight, you know. She was picked. She did not get allowed because they wanted somebody who would not be prejudiced against the guy that was an articulate, intelligent woman to deliberate on the facts. So, and there was somebody else who's. Uncle was, his father was shot and murdered while washing his car on a Sunday and whose uncle was in federal prison for, he was a judge for fraud. So it was pretty shocking to see this is the makeup of the community. All these completely upstanding people are major victims of crime, of criminality.
And so when you go and you sit in the courtroom, like what are you watching for? Are you just, is it just the process? You just want to understand how it works?
All of it. I love having my preconceptions busted. Like I know now that I cannot tell a liar. I always thought I'm pretty good,
yeah.
You know, in real life. But you're dealing with people on the most extraordinary day of their lives, mm-hmm. probably. And apart from the day of the crime, and sometimes you see incredible triumphs. There was a horrible case where a woman's head was cut off with a box cutter, right? That's the number one weapon in America and tool for hurricanes. You've got to have a box cutter to cut mm-hmm. yourself out of your house.
Right.
Of course. anyway, her head was cut off. This town, man, nothing goes on in this town. I arrived on a Sunday. There was not a single place I could get anything to eat. It was closed. And I didn't have work for a few days, just a costume fitting. So I was like, shit, I'll go to the courthouse and snuggle up to the bailiffs. I know you got to, you know, make nice with the bailiffs and try to find out what courtroom to go in. And where was I going with this story? So this lady... There's nothing happens in this town, but it turns out they have the best surgeon accrediting hospital. That's where they do it for the whole state of Louisiana. So they stitch this woman's head back on. She lives and she goes on to testify.
What?
What? It was amazing.
That is not where I thought this was going. Someone cut her head
practically off. You know, it was everything except obviously the most.
How did she not bleed out? How did she? I don't know. Oh, my God.
I know.
How do you – no one survives decapitation. That's a miracle.
Obviously near decapitation, but it was, yeah, super serious. She bloody well survived. And, yeah, anyway, so you just see some extraordinary things.
And when you
– normal people in extraordinary circumstances.
And so you and do they come up and say anything to you or
sometimes
people trying to
like,
take selfies
you know,
in the courtroom or people trying
No, nothing like that. I mean yeah. I'm super discreet and super, you know, I don't dress up. Except for the one time with the box cutter lady because I was working that day and I was dressed as the Countess from Salem, right? So I had like five wigs on or stuff. I'm like, I gotta get out of here. Am I wrapped? And I'm like running to the courthouse with the freak. I'm like, I'll bring the wigs back tomorrow. And I showed up like slow motion. But I missed the woman. I didn't get to see her
you
testify.
You didn't get to see her
I didn't
testify.
Get to, no. So that's the great regret, but that But I saw her in the family in the, you know, waiting out in the
That is so incredible. And I'm sure the person who did it, when they see her up on the stand, like, you got to be fucking kidding. Like, yeah. That woman's like, yeah, so...
She's a zombie.
This is where my head used to be fully attached, and that person... tried to cut it. Like, that is mind-blowing.
There's so many other things around it. You know, you get to see the witnesses who do not want to testify because you just don't want to have anything to do with the law in these cases. And then the policemen who can say some pretty questionable things. They might be great up on the stand, but then you hear them sniggering in the back about something they don't need to be mean about. And it just the scales fall from your eyes. Wow. That's what happens when you go to you start to learn about the real world.
That's a really fascinating way to look at it too, because when we're watching true crime or we watch stuff on the news, it's basically a highlight reel. I mean, it's the same as watching like a sports highlight reel. Like, these are all the biggest moments that happen to this thing, but actually seeing, but it still doesn't give you a sense of what the process is. Because I will watch these shows a lot of times and go, oh, but I wonder what the day to day, and Kenda talks about that too. It's like the day to day can be very boring. It's paperwork. It's feel, you know, it's all the weird legal stuff.
Yeah.
You know, like, it's not, if you went and watched all day in a courtroom, you probably are, those special magical moments are probably few and far between, I would imagine. You're sitting there most of the time waiting, I would guess.
No, I think it's 50. For me, it's like 50-50.
Wow.
There's a lot of waiting, but that's the cost of doing it. And I never go with anybody anymore because they don't know how to sit there quietly and be anonymous. They want to go, oh my God, did you hear that? I'm like, I'm never bringing you again.
No, but that's really interesting that this is like basically your meditation room is going to a courtroom and finding being centered in an otherwise extremely chaotic environment.
No, it's very ordered. It's not chaotic. Why do you say that?
Because it's built on chaos. It's built on the sorting through of chaos and reining in chaos and trying to understand and punish or not punish chaotic behavior. And so the fuel of it is very chaotic, though I hear what you're saying.
Yes, I think you're right, especially if you go to family court, there's far more of that. Or, you know, the lower courts where they're not dealing with so much murder, but
right.
And then they're getting through things fast. I imagine that's extremely chaotic. But if you're at the high court, it's extremely orderly.
What if everyone at work were an expert communicator? What if every doc, message, and email they wrote was perfectly clear and concise? Inbox numbers would drop, customer satisfaction scores would rise, and everyone would be more productive. That's what happens when you give Grammarly to your entire team. Grammarly is a secure AI writing partner that understands your business and can transform it through better communication. Companies that use Grammarly save an average of 19 days per employee per year. That's because with Grammarly's AI, what used to take a few hours only takes a few clicks, like generating an instant first draft in your company voice or tailoring a message to your specific audience and goals. And Grammarly's personalized on-brand writing help is built in everywhere your team works, across 500,000 apps and websites. Plus, it's safe, secure, and already IT approved. Join 70,000 teams who trust Grammarly with their words and their data. Learn more at Grammarly.com. Grammarly. Easier said, done.
And so are you going to do more of this show? Do you know if you're going to do more?
We'll see if they're going to order more scripts, but the court watching goes on regardless.
That's such an interesting passion project. I mean, have you ever talked to the investigation discovery people? I feel like they would give you a show.
Oh, no, I know Henry Schleif's a good friend of mine, actually.
Okay.
So, no, he runs ID Discovery, and he has offered me shows, but I'm an actress, and that's what I love to do. Yeah, just seeing people in courts, it's just real, unvarnished life. There ain't no Kardashians where I go.
I hope this doesn't sound like weird or indulgent or whatever, but are you in the back of your mind doing character studies as well? I mean, I feel like there's probably a lot to draw on.
I'm not, honestly. It's pure osmosis.
Oh, wow.
It's pure. I'm not. It's the opposite of drama.
Right.
Which is heightened. which is glamorous, which is, it's like, my favorite would be Columbo. If you go back and look at Columbo, which was a brilliant, brilliant series, apart from the fact they had 90 minutes to tell a story, they always told it about rich people. And we found that on My Life is Murder. We did one, which was of a suburban couple, and yeah, visually, it was boring. It was boring. You know, if you tune into TV, you're there to be entertained, right, first and foremost. Even if it's a news show, there's entertainment packed into that experience. So, you know, nobody's showing up in their T-shirt and their... I saw Katie Turr today on MSNBC, actually, and she was wearing a sweater, not unlike mine. Her hair was a bit messy. I was like, whoa, is this Casual Friday, Katie? Like, I couldn't hear anything she said because she looked like she'd just schlemieled in from the playground, you know?
Those Columbos are phenomenal because not only is Peter Falk was like a genius and also a comedy genius, but just a genius in general, it's you're right, it was always rich people because it relied on the fact that they... His mechanism relied on class distinction, and they always overlooked him because he just looked like this low class, dirty.
Right.
But his secret weapon was that he clocked everyone in the first 5 seconds, and he just fucked with them the entire. So it was just like he was the smartest person in the room, and their hubris didn't allow them to see that.
And the other thing is that rich people often do get away with all sorts of crimes because they're better resourced, they're better lawyers, all that sort of stuff. So to have the gumshoe come in and nail their ass to the wall, you know, is like beautiful. It's a bit of Schadenfreude, I think, on our part of the
But just, and also the torturing of the, just one more question, just one more thing, just one more thing. Because those people, they don't want to have to answer anyone. They don't want to be bothered. And it's just this like annoying, you know, it's like if a flea started biting you and then by the end of it had fully consumed you, like that's ultimately what it is.
Yep.
One more thing. I just have one
chickens.
More. Just one more. Someone just make a supercut of him going, just one more. Can I just one more? I have one more thing. Maybe there's a crime show for you to do. Like a scripted crime show for you to do.
Please.
Like an investigator. You know, I'm always fascinated by the part of the entertainment business where you just can't predict what's going to land and what's going to work, and things that you think are going to be the thing aren't, but other things that you don't expect. Was a show like Xena, was this a show where you felt right away like, yeah, this is going to be... I mean, that show was so exponentially massive on a global scale. Did you have any inkling when you're making the pilot for this show, like, this is going to be the next several years of my life?
I just thought that was the natural turn of events. I was so ignorant. I was such a country mouse in New Zealand that I thought, oh, yeah, this is good. This is going to be big and successful and everything. But even when I hear you saying exponentially successful or whatever, I don't quite believe it. It seems like you're just doing shtick because, you know, when something's just your life, it doesn't. The horizons are still only the end of the road. Do you know what I mean? So you just think, like, oh, we did this nice little show and we got to do it and we had a good time. Never a crossword. And so whether it was successful in other places, I kind of know it was, but I don't feel it was. Do you know what I mean? I can't even relate to that.
That's probably healthier. That's probably a healthy way to live,
I guess. Or it's just a deficit, you know.
Or it's just that classic New Zealand thing, you know.
Yeah, we're so small. Yeah, maybe that's it. I just couldn't get my head out in New Zealand.
But you must have, like, the first Comic-Con you went to, you must have been like, holy shit, what the hell is happening right now?
Yeah, I think I went to a XenaCon first, and there was like 5,000 people or something.
It's your own con.
And I made sure that I did for autographs for every single person. Well, I was there for hours. I was doing an Elizabeth Warren even back then. Yeah, I don't know. I was so ignorant. I thought this isn't all natural.
Yeah. Well, you didn't want anyone to feel left out, right? You wanted to make sure everyone was included.
Yeah. You got to thank the fans.
But that's the thing, is that I think shows that really connect like that, I think the fans have this sort of relationship to the people on the shows, that the people on the shows understand the fandom, like they appreciate the fandom. I think that's why Supernatural was such a big hit. I think that's why Walking Dead is such a big hit. And because I feel like
tons of fan engagement.
There's a lot of fan engagement, and the community feels like, oh, the actors don't put themselves above us. They're a part of it. They understand. Like, we're all in it. Yeah. We're all in it together. And I suspect that that was probably an element for you as well. People are like, oh, she's like one of us. Like, she understands all this stuff.
Yeah, it was also a show that it was born at the same time as the internet.
Mm-hmm.
So it very quickly had a bunch of very internet savvy, literate fans that grew a very strong network very early on. So 1995, right?
Yeah.
96. And they've remained. They've got also part of the ethos of the show was for the greater good. So they took that as their raison d'etre, and they've sort of formed a loose coalition of people who do good things for the world.
Right.
And so one day a year they have Feel the Love Week. Lucy Lawless Feel the Love Week.
Well, I think that's important.
And they do amazing things in their own communities.
Well, because I feel like so many protagonists on shows now are have a despicable, like there's a real kind of dirt, like we basically have dirty protagonists now, right? Where it's that kind of like that Walter White, oh, they're the protagonists, but they're kind of evil.
Right.
Now they're really evil. Oh, you know, this character's kind of fucked up.
And I can't stop loving
it. And I can't stop loving it. So to have a character that is fully just purely good, you know, that fights for good, that is...
Well, that would have been Hercules. Xena wasn't quite that. She might have been the start of the dirty hero.
You think
so? Because she was, you know... because she had come from a bad background and she had discovered love and discovered goodness and... Yeah.
But she embraced it. I mean, it still was... There's still...
I think she struggled. She still moided people. She was still...
She still was a warrior princess.
Yeah.
Yeah. Do you like doing physical? Because Ash vs. Evil Dead was pretty physical too. Like, you were pretty physical on that show too. Also, we love that show. Love that show to the extent that for my wife's birthday last year, I bought at an entertainment auction the Necronomicon.
Oh, you got one?
I have one. Yeah.
I do too.
Oh, you do?
Yeah.
Maybe.
Wait, now I want to see it.
I'll show it to you.
I want to see it.
Maybe you'll sign it inside later.
It used to be in my bedroom. I used to have a couple of them, you know?
Yeah.
I'm sort of lying around going, what do I do with these?
Well, you know, they did a really great job with it because they actually, there's stuff in the pages. There's all these illustrations.
Oh, wait, you mean from the last series?
Yes. The actual.
Has it got a bloody face?
Yes.
Stop it.
Yes, I'll show it to you.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, yeah.
I'll know if I'd handled that.
I can't wait to, because that was one of the reasons why, not only because it was on the show, but also it was like, wow, the prop department was so meticulous with it that there are diagrams. Like, they really built out, like, it's, I mean, there are some pages that repeat, but ultimately, it's like, this is like a Necronomicon.
It's like a real one.
Maybe we shouldn't be reading this.
That's funny.
I don't know what's going to happen. Yeah, I'll show it to you after we're done. It was because it's Ash is like my wife's favorite. If you walk around, there's like an Ash bust downstairs from Army of Darkness.
Oh, really?
There's an Ash puppet in our living room. And so when I told Lydia that you were coming over, she was like, "You should show her the Necronomicon," which is a sentence that to most couples might sound strange. Very normal around these parts.
Yeah.
Very normal around these parts.
Cool.
Do you kind of think? Is kind of staying in this community, in the Comic-Con community, is this a world that you want to continue to play in? Or do you think, like, you know, it might be fun to do like a network, you know, like a network procedural type of a show? I mean, do you have ideas about the things you want to do, or do you just kind of see what's available?
Oh, no, I love it all. And, but now, you know what I want to do? I'd love to do a West Wingy type thing,
mm-hmm.
or something, you know, anything produced by the Kings, for example.
Right.
I would love to revisit the Xena thing one time if they're all doing reboots, but that's been a whole, you know, kind of a sickening path of a very annoying path of that led to nowhere in the past, but.
Is it just sort of illegal? Is it a legal and rights issue?
No, I think they couldn't figure out how to do it. you know, they were going to try it with new people or something. They couldn't do it. So I'm like,
what do you think?
What do you think? Maybe we should go back to the old folks.
Well, I do feel like it's the kind of thing where they could do a limited series, see how it does. It would probably be huge, and then you'd be off doing it again.
Yeah.
I love hearing that you're open to doing it again, though, because sometimes, you know, when people work on a thing for a long time and they're like, I already did that. But it's nice. Like, I think it's part of the reason
why. Well, believe me, I've been through all sorts of phases with it, especially if they're looking to, you know, replace and do a different scene. Of course, I'm going to go hands off, heart off. I cannot participate in this conversation because, you know, I'm not part of it. So
right.
You will shut down your heart a little bit.
Sure.
You know what I mean? But I don't know. I got things about it.
I really, you know, with all the streaming services who are so, especially, you know, Netflix and all these new ones who are so, like, part of the carrot is bringing on content that people already know. I would be shocked if one of them wasn't like, if they heard, if they caught wind that you would be willing to do it. That they should do it.
They better be listening to the Chris Hardwick show, eh?
The president of Hollywood is like, Lawless is in. Let's do it. Let's get it done. I mean, have you thought about what the extension of the story would be? Have you thought about, does it just kind of like drop right back in? Is it continuing adventures? Is she in a different place?
I'm not telling you. Yes, I have thought a lot about it.
Good. Well, that's all I want to hear.
Yeah.
That's all I want to hear. Would you want to write it as well?
I'm not going to speak to you anymore about this subject.
Would you want to tell me about it often?
No, look, listen, I have not spoken to anybody and in any position to...
That's fine.
Things go, but I have lots of thoughts about
good,
it.
Good, 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 good. And what's your first plan when you finally land back in L.A.? What do you want to do? Do you want to just kind of get reacclimated? Do you immediately want to start trying to figure out what to do? Or do you just want to be here in this environment?
No. You can start thinking about that, you know, what you want work-wise.
Yeah.
That's an ongoing thing. So I've done a lot of meetings in the last couple of weeks and we'll just see what transpires, you know. So when I come back, I'm going to get myself an apartment. I really love this area where you are. You know, I love
up in the hills.
Old Hollywood.
Yeah. Well, we don't have a lot of, I mean, you know, in terms of the United States is a young country and Southern California is a particularly young, it's probably the youngest part of the contiguous states. And so, you know, when you look around at the history, it's like, hey, these houses were built in 1927, you know, and people are like, oh, anywhere else.
New Zealand's even younger because even though the Maori have been in New Zealand for 900,000 years, they did not have a way of building that was built to last more, you know, it was all sort of regenerative building.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So they didn't have constructions that lasted. So our buildings are only 150 years old.
Oh,
max.
Wow.
Any of them.
Yeah.
Little wooden houses.
Do you like the Spanish style houses?
I do. I love it. I love the deco Spanish style houses. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, it's a good... There's a bad thing that's happening in Los Angeles now, which is a lot of the historical things are being torn down and they're just putting up these like glass boxes everywhere.
Yeah.
You're like, you know... Not only does this look dumb now, this is going to look really stupid in 10 years, but they probably are just like, yeah, we'll just knock it down. You know, everything is...
Yeah, all their tastes in their mouth.
Yes. Oh, wow. That's a great way to put it. Because it's so just like, ah, this is what's hot now. But it's the idea that things are so disposable. Our technology... Do you remember when we were growing up, like if you bought something, that was it. Like you took care of it because you probably couldn't get another one anytime soon. And now... You are shunned from society if you don't get a new phone every year. Like, a new phone. They're fine. You know, they're fine. I do. It's just crazy. It's crazy.
That's right. That old flip top phone. They, had to go, right?
They rebooted that. Didn't the Razor, like, rebooted? And now it's like a foldable screen, but it's like...
All right. Yeah,
but that
yeah,
old
yeah.
that old-timey flip phone, you know? And even that's not that old.
Right.
Where are we going? Like, we're so we're so consumed. At a certain point, there's just not going to be any new technology. What are we going to do?
Well, it'll be prosthesis. It'll be technology as, you know, chip in your head, mm-hmm. something in your arm.
Yep. Yep. Bionic eyes.
Something in your willy.
I don't think, as long as the surgery was safe, I don't think most dudes would turn that down. A robotic willy? Come on.
Under pressure from the wife. Yeah.
Yeah. If you, hey, this thing's not. I just need to do a quick download. I just need to download
the $6 million penis. Yeah, faster, bigger, faster, stronger.
I just need a firmware update. Good night, you guys have been great. Are you? Did you ever do live theater? Do you want to do? Do you like doing live stuff at all?
Done some live theater. Yeah, I like it all. I'm just a performer. I'm a performer, so I don't always love theater.
Doing it or watching it?
Doing it.
Yeah.
But I'm not sure why that is. I love being on a set because all day long you are achieving things.
Mm-hmm.
You're like ticking it off. Check, yes. Scene two, check. Scene 2A, check. You know, and it's a very collaborative. All the crew are, they're super collaborators,
mm-hmm.
super cooperators. And otherwise you can't, if you're not a super cooperative human being, you can't fit into a team like that where everybody has to have a common focus for many, many hours a day, not necessarily talking to one another, but step in just when your job is necessary. So it's a certain kind of person. That's why crews are the same all over the world.
Right.
And it's in the Marie Kondo bloody collection of life. I could never leave it because that brings me so much joy. I love working with people like that, and I love the producing something together with minimal words and minimal communication. You're just all synced up.
It sounds like you love process. Like going to courts is process. Oh. Like you're watching a process unfold, and working on a show, you're watching a process unfold.
Yeah, maybe, yeah.
That it's a... Were you an organized kid growing up? Did you, like, set to-do lists and check, 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 check?
No. No, I'm very instinctive.
Mm-hmm.
But you might be right. I've never thought about it like that.
I mean, processes in a world that sort of feels uncontrollable or chaotic or whatever, it is very comforting, like a structure of like do this and then do this and then do this and then do this is incredibly satisfying.
You're right. And it's quite hard to get used to at first because I remember the first 8 months of Xena, which was my first major job, obviously, losing my mind because I had no say in what time I got up, what time I got home, what I wear that day, what I say, what I eat, when I can see my children, my mm-hmm. mother. My life outside of work shrank down to almost nothing. And finally, I just surrendered to it. In 8 months in, I surrendered and I never had a problem, which means that I have to be rehabilitated back into real life because I'm like not that good at that. So maybe you're right. What I do for relaxation, I go to a place with a lot of process.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because then you can just surrender to it and go, right. Okay, I know, I'll stand there, doing. I'll say
and
this.
And when they tell me to leave and go home, okay.
Okay, I'm done.
Okay.
Audible is the destination for thrilling audio entertainment with highly anticipated new releases. The time is now more than ever to embrace the breathtaking, sinister, and shocking tales that can enthrall you, especially with brand new exclusive thrillers from best-selling authors who are guaranteed to keep you gripped, like Amy Tintera's Listen for the Lie. With exclusive thrillers from best-selling authors, captivating sound design, and dynamic performances, Audible brings these stories to life like never before. And as a member, you can choose one title a month to keep from their entire catalog. New members can try Audible free for 30 days. Visit audible.com/WonderyPod or text WonderyPod to 500-500. That's audible.com/WonderyPod or text WonderyPod to 500-500.
So what sort of process is, like, if you don't have a courtroom available and you're not working on a thing... what do you sort of do with your free time? How do you structure your free time, and how do you motivate yourself in the absence of a pre-existing structure? Are you able to create your own structure in order to get things accomplished?
Between jobs, when I was starting out, I would get into home sort of crafts, like sanding down tables or picture frames or whatever, and resurfacing mm-hmm. them and oiling them, beautiful old wood and stuff like that, or decoupage or anything, just to make the home beautiful. And we were very, very poor. So it was secondhand junk turned and made into treasures.
Yes.
But I do get little hobbies, or I go writing with my friends or singing. You find a way to creatively keep, get a project going. You know?
Right.
Yeah.
Do you like to restore? Like, if you buy an old house, are you going to want to buy one that's restored, or do you want to get in and do all the work?
No,
yourself?
I would want to do it myself.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I wouldn't be doing it myself. I'm not going to wallpaper the whole thing.
No.
But I would like a place with good bones that just needs a reimagining, you know.
That's what we did here. We had to restore this place from, and it took 2 years.
Wow.
And, but we lived in it at the time. And that is
nightmarish.
It is a little bit. Yeah, it is a little bit. Because you're just always in the way. You're in the way in your own house. And every morning at 7:30, there's like, you have all these new roommates who are just doing the work that they were hired to do. And you have to get out of the way. And it's like, oh, none of the bathrooms work today. Okay, sorry, guys. You know.
Sorry about it.
I didn't know that before. I probably should have...
Before I drank my coffee.
Oh, so the water's shut off. Oh, well, this is really unfortunate.
Okay, don't go in there.
Don't go in there. It's nothing you want to see in there. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Do you like to modernize old things, or do you like to sort of, you know, bring back the ancient splendor?
I think I'm in the ancient splendor box at the moment because, you know, if you get an old deco place, I don't want to see it bastardized. I want it to be exactly taken right back to as it was designed to be.
Yeah.
Yeah. And sometimes you've got to hack out a lot of horrible 80s modernization.
Oh, it's definitely an archaeological dig where you're looking at the stratification of like, this was a bad decade. Why did people do this then?
Yeah. You feel embarrassed for them that they thought that was a good idea.
You mirrored the ceiling in a 1928 Spanish.
Yeah, you covered in that asbestos sparkly stuff all over. Now I have to get rid of the asbestos, dumb bastards.
Oh, yeah, we've had to do that before in restoration where it's... Because once you start poking holes in walls, you don't know what you're going to find. Is it going to be asbestos, a skeleton, a treasure?
Please, a skeleton.
Skeleton treasure. A skeleton made of diamonds would be great. I do like to watch videos of like... Man finds 2-pound emerald hidden in wall, you know, because it just kind of makes you go like, what the fuck is hidden in these walls? You know, like you just don't know.
Okay, let me ask you this.
Yeah.
What's your favorite true crime?
Like the
of recent years.
Story person act.
All of the above.
I was pretty fascinated by the Jodi Arias trial.
Yeah, that was amazing.
Because it... And again, I don't know, and I've tried to, you know, I've looked online and tried to figure out, is it sociopathy? Is it borderline personality disorder? Like, what is it? Because it was the moments after the murder where she was doing all these interview shows, like, well, we're going to find the, like, that's a ballsy move. You know, like trying to get in front of it that way.
She was so good, wasn't she? Yeah.
And then as the story started to crumble, like watching her pivot. And then in one of the later successive trials, the idea that she thought, oh, I'm going to make t-shirts and sell them. And I'm going to wear the t-shirt in court as an advertisement. I mean, it's just so like all over the map. Mm. And so it's trying to figure out. Again, I don't know her. I'm not trying to be disparaging toward anyone, but it's just that there's like this sort of emptiness behind her eyes, at least in what it looked like when you're trying to figure out like watching the gears turn in her head, that to me was very fascinating because it was such a microscope of like, is this unchecked mental illness? Is this just pure, sociopathic bravado? Like what is it that's driving her, and watching all the pivots and the twists and turns?
Yeah, that was a very extraordinary case, especially the amount of overkill. It's like the first stab would have killed him.
Right.
She didn't have to go on with it and then cut his neck, right?
Right.
As he ran down the hall, she'd stabbed him a ton of times, ran down the hall. There was that rainbow of blood as he slumped to the floor. He was already dying from the very first stab. She drags him back, bungs him in the shower, I guess hose him off, and then pops a cap in his head, right?
Right.
So the rage, the incredible rage and power of this girl to have been able to drag that big man back. And the one of the very curious things, she came and snuck into his house one night through the cat flap. Did you remember that? Through the freaking cat flap.
Oh, no.
She was gunning so hard for him. And then she made a beeline for another boyfriend, just had sex with him to prove that she couldn't possibly have had sex with anybody else a mere 12 hours ago.
Wow.
That was her alibi. Oh my God, that was terrible.
Yeah, so that one was pretty fascinating. That one was pretty fascinating to me. I mean, and then I do like, I like the different shades. I like Forensic Files because it is such a time capsule, because it was new technology at the time, and the narrator, oh my God,
just lulls you to sleep.
Peter, he was really big. He was the voice that they used in the na 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 19, that Paul Hardcastle song,
really?
From the '80s, because he was a very distinctive narrator, and
it just rolls over because it has no credits.
There's no credits. It just rolls over, and you're watching them talk about this new technology of computers and DNA, but it's. You know, it's 20, 25 years old, and so it's kind of fun. It's a time capsule way.
I also liked City Confidential. Remember when that guy with the southern accent?
Oh, right. Yeah.
He died, unfortunately, and then somebody else who sounds very similar took it over. But I really liked that because it got to show you, you know, lull you into this false sense of security about this beautiful part of America and then unfolding some hideous crime.
Yeah,
but
watching all the iterations. You know, my wife was watching one that Susan Lucci hosted. Like, she hosted the wraparounds for it, and it was all like passion crimes, and it's salacious. And the thing that's funny to me about it is, you know, there's these lines in there like, "Well, two's company, but three is murder," and then you're like, that's kind of fun, and then you go, "Wait a minute, people died," you know?
Yeah,
it's such a strange.
Yeah,
we've gotten so unnaturally comfortable with murder as an entertainment source. It's a very strange. It's a very strange thing.
Now I feel ashamed.
No, we all do it. Well, it's that morbid curiosity, you know. It's that
people have always been interested in this for thousands of years.
Of course,
they used to write about it in the newspapers all the time, and in England, right back in like. 1500s. There weren't newspapers, of course.
No,
but people were really taken with updates of hideous crimes.
There was a series that was really interesting. The premise of it was really fascinating, although it was a difficult, without spoiling too much, it was a difficult thing to pay off. But there's a guy who's a direct descendant of H.H. Holmes.
Oh, yeah, the cop who found it and has found the box in his garage.
Well, this is the guy that is, he's like a direct, he's like a great. He's a direct descendant.
I've heard it.
And his belief is that H.H. Holmes was Jack the Ripper.
Yeah, I mean, that he went over there at that time.
And Jack was an alias that he used. And he tracked the evolution of, like, his early murders. Like, you know, Jack the Ripper was, like, refining his surgical techniques.
It's very satisfying, I will say. It's a very satisfying theory.
But, of course, what you want is the end of that, and whatever. This is kind of a spoiler, but, you know, if H.H. Holmes was Jack the Ripper, you'd already know about it by now. But it's just, it's a difficult one to pay off because it's just sort of open-ended. Like, well, these are all the reasons why, but I guess it's kind of up to you to sort of,
but
you may
hello,
never know.
The fact that H.H. Holmes really existed.
Yes.
Is so disgusting and you know, that he built a whole hotel that was, you know, basically a place for boiling down.
A murder hotel that they can't excavate because there's a post office on top of where it used to be. And so
what?
The government won't give them permission to excavate because it's like their parking lot. It's like a post office parking lot. So it's like,
oh, for God's sake.
I know.
It's ridiculous.
I know. This motherfucker bought a cement factory and may have pioneered like putting people in cement and dropping them into the river in Chicago.
What period in his evolution does this chap say he went to London?
It was after...
Prior to the hotel, obviously.
I don't know if it was prior to the hotel.
Because who the hell's going to be looking after the hotel and making sure nobody goes in the second floor or the basement? Do you know what I mean? Who's going to be...
That looks like a bathroom. It's a meat grinder.
It's like Igor. Did he have an Igor? I can't remember.
He had an accomplice that he ultimately killed.
Right.
He had this guy literally murdered everyone in his life. He murdered every wife. He took their... And he got caught because of an insurance scam. Because he kept murdering wives and claiming insurance money. And I'm pretty sure they found... And then the guy who was covering for him the whole time, they ended up killing that guy. So he was just like... Like some people are just... Yeah. I don't know if it's nature or nurture, but some people... He was just a bad egg.
A very bad egg.
Yeah.
A very bad egg. The bad eggs of the last 10 years were Casey Anthony. The big three were Casey Anthony, Jodi Arias, and Chris Watts.
Right.
There is another thing. A lot of crazy stuff happens in Colorado, actually. One that happened in Colorado was Shauna Nelson. Do you know about that one? Shauna Nelson. So interesting. So she's got this really handsome, husky, bearded, good-looking cop husband. And she's having an affair with the kind of ugly married colleague of her husband, mm-hmm. and she's a police dispatcher, and his name is Ig, which is just the fact that his name is Ig. It's obviously it's Ignacio, but his name is Ig.
Right.
It's like Id. It's just something about that name is really, I don't know, it says it all really. Anyway, so does she have a baby to Ig? She has a baby to Ig, and her husband, sort of dumpty doo, doesn't know anything about it. And then one night she makes the kids, you know, here kids have some pizza, mummy's going to go and have a bath, sneaks out the bathroom window and puts on one of those Halloween masks and like a snood, what do you call that? You know, that big long face of Halloween, you know, like a scream.
Oh, scream, like the
Halloween mask. Well, right?
Yeah.
And some little karate shoes and drives through the snow in her husband's truck. Guns down Egg's wife in a car park with using a man's voice, but she runs like a girl, so all the workers see it. Anyway, runs. Her husband actually apprehends her on the way home. Meanwhile, she's chucked all the Halloween costume out the windows, right? And her husband, I think, was the one who actually apprehended her. And it's just so... It was kind of intriguing. Like none of these people nobody had to go to prison. Nobody had to die.
Right.
No, none of these things needed to happen except this woman went apeshit on this particular day and gunned down this completely innocent, nice woman.
Who was
never
the wife
of the lover.
Oh my gosh.
But it was, I always thought like, God, I wish I was young enough to play her because I would love to walk in her little karate shoes.
Just try to figure out, just sort of trying to figure
when
out.
When did she go, that's a good idea?
Do you ever worry, this is like a weird paranoid thought, but do you ever, like if you're playing one of these characters, do you have any fear that you're going to like go, oh, I get it now. Like I understand
the
darkness.
But nothing that is human is alien to me. Except I don't get the Jodi Arias thing because that's a bridge too far. You know, you're not coming at it from a normal psychology. Whereas I believe this woman was, up until this point, normal but avaricious and lustful and covetous and all this stuff.
I mean, that's a lot of planning to be like, I'm going to sneak out.
And leave my kids alone.
Leave the kids alone, put on all this stuff, go. It sounds like, I feel like there was a homicide hunter where they caught, where maybe it was this woman or something similar happened, but what they realized is that one like little weird detail was that they saw her carrying a purse over her shoulder, it was like a fake crime. So this person disguised as a man, but it was a woman, stole the purse. But it was, they finally cracked it after a while. Like, wait, how is she holding the purse? How is this person holding the purse when he ran away? Oh, put it over his shoulder. Oh, well, that's how a woman carries. And then they realize, oh my God, it was a woman disguised as a man. Yeah. I wonder if that's the same case. Hmm. So the husband, like, they immediately caught her, or it took a little bit of time?
No, they caught her right on the right way away. Back, okay, I believe. But she was pulled over because it wasn't a very big city or anything. You know, she was leaving the bank and driving, I don't know, five miles home or something. And it was, I don't know.
I mean, they're so strange because it's not the only takeaway is really like, yeah, don't kill people. But there's not really another takeaway other than that. You're just kind of watching like,
oh,
this is what happens when people go sideways.
Yeah, the amazing disrespect to her kids to use them as her alibi, you know. And disrespect to her husband to use his truck to go and gun this woman. You know, everything was about protecting her identity.
Right.
Just the utter, utter hideous. All her care was about herself getting away with it.
Right.
And everybody else was just props.
I wonder, is that just unchecked narcissism? Is that a circumstantial lapse in judgment?
I don't know.
There's too many factors. But when something is that premeditated, it's sort of like, that's not a crime of not that any of it's okay. But I mean, like, you know, when someone goes to those lengths, it's like, oh yeah, that's, and that the husband. I mean, I wonder if he had any, there's no way he could have had any inkling.
No, he was a good, you know, he was kind of a good guy who didn't appear to know who his wife truly was. And do any of us know who anybody is?
I mean, I guess that's true, but it's still.
Yeah, no, she was a stinker. Anyway, it was just intriguing to me because it's such a family drama, you know. Ugh.
So any
and
other?
All for the love of egg.
For egg.
Pathetic.
Come on.
Because her husband was actually raising his kid. I think maybe her husband knew, and he was raising the kid anyway.
Oh, wow.
It was something, you know, I might be getting that wrong.
So those are the big three, and then that one as well. Is there another one?
That doesn't constitute come anywhere near the big three, because the big three are just too intriguing. And when you have brilliant liars, I mean, Chris Watts was by no means a good liar. He was caught dead to rights. And the other thing is that everything's on camera these days. There's so much documentary evidence, right? For whether it's at the bank or, you know, the neighbor's security cameras are picking information up, or they've got that kind of door lock that films whoever's at the... So much real-time evidence of this is the victim going from leaving the airport, arriving at home... not leaving in the morning, you know, him pulling his truck up in a very suspicious way.
Yeah, well, and that's why, going back to H.H. Holmes, that's why it was the lack of any surveillance, and also setting up during the World's Fair, the Chicago World's Fair, where you have people just transiently coming and going. No, there's no
staying,
record of anything.
Staying looking for a hotel to stay at?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, it's crazy. But did you watch Mindhunter on Netflix?
Yes, I've seen some of it, yeah.
Yeah, the second – it's that idea when they – because the profiling of serial killers is – I mean, in terms of, like, culturally, relatively new, like, in the history of people.
Yeah.
And that idea of, you know, obsession – it just seems weird that that's – I mean, I'm sure there must have been some version of that at some point, but when you think about – how police in general are not that old as a like the modern day police that we know. It's like, what, 150 years old, maybe. And that kind of like modern police work and modern detective work, it's actually not, it's still a relatively new thing.
Science, yeah.
Yeah. What do you think this says about us as a people? Do you think that there's anything to be learned from any of this stuff? Or do you think that there's a way to snuff it out, or is it just like, well, as long as there's going to be people, there's going to be shitty ones, and there's going to be murders?
Yeah, I do think that.
Oh, man.
But we can reduce the incidence by addressing economic inequity, and because a lot of murders are caused by stress, right? And of course, drugs and mental illness and lack of security is those all bring those kind of stresses.
Yeah, and it's unfortunate that there's not a way to try to treat the problem and not the symptom. The symptom being just people going, you know, like losing it and killing people, but figuring out how can we get better access to mental health treatment and drug treatment and, you know, before it
goes
sideways.
They did in Portugal that seems to be working is they decriminalized all drugs. And incarceration obviously goes way down, but HIV, new infections have dropped to the lowest levels any country's seen.
Because people aren't sharing needles because they can just go...
Well, people are able to seek help without the fear that they're going to be incarcerated. Right, without the stigma. Stigma's a big one that makes people go towards things. You know, we all relate to being told, oh, you can't have that cookie as a child and then just wanting the cookie so bad, right? there's something in us. We're hardwired to want to break the rules a little bit, you know, all of us. Anyway, I think that we should be looking at places like Portugal and going, you know what? It doesn't have to be right, but it works.
Right.
It works. And stop acting like our identity, our national identity, is predicated on having a war on drugs, which is a big joke and everybody knows it. Or, there's a ton of things that we all think are really necessary to being part of America or part of New Zealand or part of anywhere that are just not so.
I really, really, really hope that, well, there's a lot of things that I hope. I think it would be fun, you know, if you got to go back and revisit Xena again. I also think it would be really great to see you on like a real gritty crime drama show. Because you are so passionate about it that I think it would really connect and land for you in a big way.
Yeah. Well, that'd be nice. Thank you. From your mouth to God's ear.
Yeah. I don't know. I mean, maybe, since you do write, maybe it's something to think about pitching. I feel like there's something there, and I know it's something that you just do, and, you know, maybe you don't want to turn something that's kind of like your fascination and meditative space into like a job. But at the same time, it just seems to me that there's really something there for you, like in a real way that might pay off. So I don't know, maybe in your free time, just think about taking some notes, come up with a show and pitch it. Cause I really, really, really believe just hearing you talk, and I can see your face. People can't see your face, and your eyes light up when you sort of talk about the process of it. I mean, like, it's clear that you're passionate about it.
Oh, good. Okay.
Yeah.
Huh. Okay.
I wonder what your show would be. Do you like doing the American accent?
Yeah, I'm a bit rusty, but
because this is a super nerdy thing to say, but as a big Simpsons fan, your Simpsons Halloween episode is great. But if I remember correctly, I think you're doing an American accent in there.
I told you, I'm not Lucy Lawless. I was doing the Xena voice. Yeah, Xena.
You were doing the Xena voice.
Xena has an American accent. Yeah.
Xena doesn't fly. I told you, I'm
not Xena. That's right. I'm not Xena. I'm Lucy Lawless. Yeah, that's right.
And also a gentle swipe at Comic-Con culture in a delightful, fun way.
Adorable way.
The Collector. It was fun. But is there anything you want to plug or promote or anything you are excited about right now?
Do you know what? I've been meditating.
TM?
TM. Because I got kicked in the head like a year ago at yoga. And I've had a couple of concussions in my life. And it just got harder and harder. It was causing some problems. You know, I went to see some body workers. They're like, you know, you have a concussion and you got whiplash on both sides of your neck, which has probably been around for like decades.
It's a very uncommon thing. You don't, yoga doesn't really feel like a place you get like contact injured.
I know. She was an overzealous handstander. Anyway, but I find that TM has been the most effective at... It lets your brain slow down and start to heal, and I feel so much better. But has these other collateral effects of just shutting out the noise of life and making me far more focused and far more you can just go deeper into things. And I don't know, it stops you wasting time. So 20 minutes once or twice a day, it seems like a lot of time to carve out, but it buys you hours and hours.
No, I've been doing it for a couple of years, and yeah. and the 20 minutes in the beginning feels a little excruciating because you're like, what am I supposed to be doing? But it doesn't take too long before the 20 minutes is just over.
Hey, do you do it like sitting cross-legged?
No.
I cannot do it. I did that this morning. I couldn't walk for
that. No, I don't think you're supposed to do it. I don't think you have to do it that way.
No, you don't, but I just want to sit on the ground so I can get my hips, you know, I do yoga as well.
Right.
So I'm just trying to help myself. As you get older, you want to be really mobile, right? But by golly, I don't think I can do that.
No, I would recommend just doing stretching. Do you have a foam roller?
Yeah, well, not in my suitcase. I travel like
you can get like travel size foam rollers. Like I got a roller for a friend of mine that's a water bottle.
Yeah.
And it's a water bottle and a roller, and it's got these like ridges on it.
And what do you do with it?
You roll on it. You lie on it, and you basically like roll around until you find like
some heavy spot. Yeah,
like some spot.
Yeah.
And then you just kind of sit there for a second until it works itself out. Because if you just sit cross-legged for 20 minutes, like if I got on my knees on the floor right now, after 5 minutes, I would be limping for like 20 minutes. Yeah. So it's, yeah, I don't, I the way that I was taught to do the TM is that you just get into a comfortable position. Right. That it's supposed to be as seamless and simple as possible and effortless. And
I'm going back to the armchair after this. But I pushed all the furniture to the sides of the room. I just sort of sit on the ground now with cushions and things. But I'm going back to the chair for meditation for sure.
I feel like if I tried to do that after 5 minutes, I'd be like, ow, 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 ow. Like I wouldn't be able to focus on the thing.
I have to admit, I only made it 15 minutes. I was like, bugger this for a game of soldiers. This is awful.
Yeah, I think that's just that older idea of like to meditate, you have to sit straight up and you have to. Well, that's why I think the idea of meditation is so daunting to people, because they do have that notion of like, you know, like this perfectly flexible yogi fella who just meditates. He just ohms so hard, you know, and they're like, I just got to meditate so hard. And it's like, no, it's the absence of doing anything, you know. It's like you're trying to not like.
So do you do it with I do a guided meditation because I don't trust myself. So do you do a real one and just use your word?
Yeah. Yeah,
oh,
I do.
Good.
Yeah. And a lot of times my brain just starts in trying to engage in stuff, and I just try to remember to do the word and bring it back to like, oh, this is what I'm here to do. And once you can kind of accept that there's no real wrong way to do it, everyone's going to be every different session's going to be different, then it's sort of like,
but it seems to work anyway.
It does.
Like it changes your life in a really strange way. I feel so like ridiculously calm these days.
I think the other thing too is, on a very subconscious level, much in the same way as if you stretch or you exercise or you eat healthy, when you make those choices, you're basically on a very deep level saying to yourself, I am worth taking the time to do something that's helpful. And so there is almost an acceptance of yourself in that way,
right?
Because it's difficult to do things in a consistently if you, you know, like if you really have it out for yourself.
Right.
Because you wouldn't make those like pro you choices. And so I think on a deep subconscious level, you're kind of accepting yourself.
It doesn't work. Yeah, that's right. Change doesn't happen with this finger wagging at yourself. It just doesn't happen that way.
No, because then that just creates a cycle of shame and self-loathing.
Right.
And then you're just not, and you're spiraling, you don't get anything done.
Right.
Yeah. So I think in a way, not only is it sort of doing all of the things that, you know, like rest and all the stuff, all the chemical stuff, but I think there's also like a real spiritual and subconscious, like, hey, I deserve to feel calm. I deserve, it's like an acceptance of yourself,
right.
I think.
Yeah.
I don't know. I hope that you feel welcome to come back on this podcast anytime.
Thank you.
You want to talk about murder shows or TM or you know, the inevitable Xena reboot that's going to happen. Anything that you want to talk about, you are welcome to come on, especially if you move into the neighborhood.
Yeah, come I love on. Your neighborhood.
Oh, my God. It's great up here.
Cool views.
The views are good, but it's also like it's very quiet up here. But you're 2 minutes from everything, you know?
Yeah, I like it.
The only noise you hear at night is sometimes you'll hear coyotes, and it's kind of nice. Yeah. Thank you for being here, Lucy Lawless. Oh,
thank you for having me.
I'm going to go get the Necronomicon and show it to you. And this is where we will end. The end.
ID10T scanning complete. Enjoy your burrito.
Once upon a beat. Remember the stories and fables that captured your imagination when you were young? We have a perfect podcast to bring you the stories you remember, remixed and reimagined for the kids in your life today. Yeah. Wondery and Tinkercast are bringing you a music-filled weekly party hosted by me, DJ Fuse, and my trusty turntable, Baby Scratch, spinning tales in the New Kids and Family podcast, Once Upon a Beat, where hip-hop and fables meet. Hey, grown-ups, listen to Once Upon a Beat early and ad-free right now on Wondery Plus.
Once Upon a Beat.